This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Wednesday, 12th June, 1901. The House of Representatives. Mr. Speaker reminded the House that the Governor-General would receive the address in reply at 2:30 and invited members to accompany him to the Executive Council chamber. The Governor-General's response expressed gratitude for the assurances of loyalty and hope for beneficial outcomes from Parliament's considerations. Mr. Arthur Groome, representing the Free Trade Party, asked the Minister for Customs, Mr. Kingston of the Protectionist Party, if he would provide a return showing the yearly amount of imports from countries outside the Commonwealth, broken down by each state for the last 5 years, and separating the amounts that were free from those that were dutiable. Mr. Kingston responded affirmatively. Mr. Donald Norman Cameron asked the Prime Minister, Mr. Barton of the Protectionist Party representing Hunter, when and where the elected members took the oath of allegiance. Mr. Barton replied that 73 members took the oath on May 9th at the Exhibition Building before the Governor-General, and the remaining two took it on May 21st at Parliament House. Mr. Cameron then raised concerns that a large proportion of members, including himself, had not been properly sworn. He explained that he had attended the swearing-in, but was not given a Bible, nor called upon to make and subscribe the Oath of Allegiance, as required by the Commonwealth of Australia Act, Section 42. Mr. Charles MacDonald interjected to ask if Mr. Cameron had signed the vellum sheet, to which Mr. Cameron replied that he had not. Mr. Barton clarified that the vellum sheets were for the role of the House and were not directly connected to the oath itself, noting that the Governor-General recited the oath and members repeated it in batches. He urged Mr. Cameron to be sworn in if he felt he had not properly taken the oath. The Speaker then directed Mr. Cameron to take a seat pending further discussion. Mr. MacDonald suggested there should be further inquiry into the matter, since Mr. Cameron had been participating in chamber business, voting and signing for a month's salary without being properly sworn. Mr. Hume Cook questioned whether the votes given by Mr. Cameron were valid, but the Speaker indicated it was not his responsibility to answer that question. Mr. Barton confirmed Mr. Cameron's signature on the vellum sheet and reiterated that the Speaker had no alternative but to administer the oath when a member presented themselves. Mr. Watson, on behalf of the Honourable Member for Parramatta, asked about appeals between the Postmaster General and officers of the Post and Telegraph Department of New South Wales. Sir Philip Fish, representing the Postmaster General, responded that the appeals were concluded and the determinations would be announced once Parliament provided the necessary funds. Mr. Hume Cook asked when line repairers' assistance in Victoria would receive arrears of salary due under Section 19 of the Public Service Act 1900. Sir Philip Fish stated that no arrears could be paid until the Public Service Board supplied the necessary information. During discussion of the supply bill, the proposed vote for the Speaker's salary was altered from £1,500 to £1,100. Mr. MacDonald inquired about the salary of the clerk to the House of Representatives, explaining that there was some difficulty regarding his position in the State Parliament. Mr. Barton explained there was a saving because the clerk was currently on leave from the Legislative Council of Victoria, where he received £1,200 a year. Until July 31st, he would be paid by the Victorian government. Debate then turned to the salaries of ministers and the method of reporting parliamentary debates. Mr. Watson moved that the issue of ministers' salaries be discussed, but the Speaker and the Chairman noted that the items under consideration were confined to the House of Representatives. Mr. Fowler remarked that, as one of the few members who voted in favour of a reduction in the Senate, the salaries provided struck a fair balance between the policy of economy and efficiency. Mr. W.H. Groome asked the Prime Minister about providing members with proofs of their speeches. Mr. Barton replied that the government printer's mechanical appliances did not allow for that. New machinery had been ordered, but had not yet arrived. Mr. Bruce Smith then asked if the Cabinet had considered a cost comparison between maintaining an official reporting staff and contracting for Hansard, given that sessions might only last 2 or 3 months. Mr. Barton referred to the success achieved by the Parliament of England. One notable contribution came from Mr. Mahon. He noted that there were 9 official reporters, not 7, and stated, "If the Prime Minister has any practical acquaintance with the work of the staff, he must know that the time of the chief reporter and the second reporter is entirely occupied in checking the work of the other 7. I would suggest to the government, not that the reporting of our debates should be farmed out, a suggestion which came from a very proper quarter, but that the House of Commons system should be adopted. We have here a staff of highly skilled and competent reporters, men who have served their time on newspapers and have separated themselves from politics. Why should we not allow them to condense the reports of honourable members' speeches? We know very well that honourable members will repeat their remarks, so why not allow the official reporters to report in the third person and to condense their reports?" This remark captured the sentiment of many regarding the efficiency of parliamentary reporting. After extended discussion on these various points, ranging from the procedures of swearing in, the validity of votes cast by members not properly sworn, to issues of parliamentary reporting and salaries, the House proceeded with a vote on several procedural matters. It was agreed that if a member presented themselves with concerns about the oath, the Speaker would have no option but to administer the oath. The vote was carried and progress was reported. The House adjourned at 11:55 p.m. Votes agreed and progress reported. The Senate. Senator James Drake, the Postmaster General from the Protectionist Party in Queensland, announced that the Governor General would receive the address in reply at 3 p.m. The President remarked that he should have made that announcement himself, emphasizing the Senate's valued constitutional power of direct communication. Senator Edward Pulsford inquired about communication from the Consul of Japan regarding immigration. Senator Drake confirmed that such communication had been received and tabled for consideration. Senator Sir Frederick Sargood then questioned how the Senate would remain busy. Senator Drake assured that motions and bills were scheduled, noting a delay in one particular bill and indicating that while the House of Representatives would handle a detailed measure, the Senate could proceed with its other work. Senator Hugh DeLargy asked whether the government was aware of Western Australia's concerns about undesirable aliens, and if the immigration bill would take their wishes into account. Senator Drake affirmed both points. Later, Senator John Keating inquired whether Tasmania restricted postal service appointments to state school graduates. Senator Drake clarified that while applicants required a certificate from the fifth standard, special examinations were arranged for those not from state schools, and he answered the second part of the query in the negative. A vigorous debate on parliamentary procedure ensued. Senator Albert Gould attempted to raise a point regarding a response given, but the President ruled it was too late. When Senator Gregor McGregor asked about the proper moment to bring a question of privilege, the President insisted it must arise suddenly and be brought forward after notice. The discussion touched on established Imperial Parliament practice and the requirement for a senator to state fully the motion intended to vindicate the Senate's privileges. Senator John Neild pointed out that the clerk should produce and read the report, while Senator McGregor resolved to act on the matter at another time. The President then reported that the address in reply had been presented to the Governor-General, who responded with assurances of continued loyalty to the throne and trust in the beneficial outcome of the Senate's deliberations. Attention, then, turned to the debate on the Post and Telegraph Bill. Senator Gould congratulated the Postmaster-General on his clear exposition, viewing the bill as a consolidation of existing state measures. Senator Henry Dobson raised concerns about costly buildings potentially hindering postal facilities, with Senator Gould suggesting that the work might be carried out in alternate premises, while advocating for buildings that were both architecturally pleasing and functional. The debate expanded to the financing of postal buildings, with discussion over raising money by loans in conjunction with establishing a sinking fund. Senator Dobson questioned whether the treasurer might appropriate the sinking fund, to which Senator Sargood interjected that any such appropriation would require parliamentary authority, although Senator Gould doubted such approval would be likely. The debate then shifted to the scope and purpose of the bill. Senator Norman Ewing disagreed with the notion that the bill was merely a machinery bill, arguing that regulations, once laid before Parliament, effectively became law, sometimes without sufficient oversight. He cited experiences in Western Australia and stressed that regulations should be sanctioned by Parliament. Senator Playford emphasized that no government would proceed without first taking the opinion of Parliament, asserting that legislative power should remain firmly in the hands of elected representatives. Senator Simon Fraser complimented the Postmaster General on his lucid statement. In response to interjections about the naming and roles of postal officers, Senator Fraser explained that Deputy Postmasters General were to have co-equal power, suggesting that there should be 6 inspectors rather than 6 Deputy Postmasters General. Senator Thomas Playford cautioned against incorporating numerous separate regulations into the bill, warning that it would lead to confusion. A contentious discussion followed regarding further amendments. Senator Higgs argued that, while the loss of revenue from interstate penny postage would be significant, the clause that granted the minister the power to frame regulations with the force of law, regardless of whether Parliament approved them, was the most important matter under debate. Senator Harney then noted that the bill contained provisions not directly related to postal business. He explained that if the Postmaster General, on what he deemed reasonable grounds, suspected that an individual was operating a lottery, betting, or fortune-telling business, he could effectively halt any communication to that person. In a particularly notable moment, he declared, "Show me a man who conducts a lottery, and I can tell him that he is safe in the receipt of none of his letters." Senator Ewing countered that such decisions removed the process from proper parliamentary oversight, while Senator Harney maintained that the clause was intended to limit the influence of state privileges in matters that affected the Commonwealth as a whole. Further remarks emphasized the delicate balance between functions of the Commonwealth and those of the states. Some senators underlined that while these measures might seem to extend beyond postal business, they were designed to address broader social concerns and ensure the proper governance of communications. The discussion touched on the economic implications for revenue sectors and the need for responsible regulation. Towards the conclusion, motions concerning Senate papers for printing and consideration of committee reports were moved by Senator Drake. The session ended with mutual acknowledgements among the senators, including remarks from Senator McGregor, Senator Pulsford, and Senator Zeal. This summary reflects the key debates of the day, particularly the presentation of the address in reply, the parliamentary procedural discussions, the detailed debate on the Post and Telegraph Bill, and the interplay between Commonwealth authority and state rights in regulating critical functions. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au